When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Fans, been a long time. Congratulations on the win tonight and good luck in playoffs.
Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from Lighthouse Hockey and Fans First Sports Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me on this Thursday evening via Zencaster is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, we got a lot to get to. The Islanders clinched a playoff berth in a win against New Jersey on Monday. They then played a very meaningless and frankly bizarre game against the Penguins on Wednesday. And we got Arthur Staple coming up in the second half to talk to us about the season that was and what to look forward to. And we've got a playoff series against the Hurricanes starting on Saturday. And we got a lot of stuff to discuss and not a whole lot of time to do it. Where were your emotions from Monday night when the Islanders clinched to today? Are you still as excited as you were at that point and kind of relieved, is just the way I put it? Or is the sort of anxiety of the playoffs beginning to kind of creep in a little bit a couple of days before the series starts?
Yeah, weirdly, the anxiety hasn't hit me yet. I'm sure that it will at some point during game one. I can kind of remember that being the case in last year, kind of upset with how not nervous I was. And then, midway through the game, it's obviously started. But I thought that, leave it to the Islanders this season to have their most kind of mundane win of the season come on the night where they clinch a playoff spot. And boy, were we lucky that they did that, because with the way that the out-of-town scoreboard went that night,
seriously,
we would have just been in agony for a couple days, and who knows how the Penguins game would have been affected if the Islanders had something to play for and whatever. That game against the Devils, I would say right after Nelson scored that 3-1 game, the Devils looked like they had just quit. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, it was like a sense of calm. I don't even know if it was relief, but this blissful calm came over me, just knowing that once this game's over and the Islanders clinch, you got 4 or 5 days of just pure, unadulterated relief. From this team. They play their first meaningless game in, if you include last year's playoff series, which was 6 games, so 82 games plus 6, that's 88, plus another 81, we're getting to 169 straight playoff games basically for this team. They finally get one that's not it's basically a preseason game. I don't know, this whole week I've been in a very kind of even keel mode. And I think part of it is just knowing what's coming, a bit, with not just in terms of the playoffs and the ebbs and flows of a playoff and a potential playoff run, but also, just knowing that, knowing what's coming from the media and from like the hockey universe, a lot of people and 98% of the people who are going to make a prediction on the series are going to pick the Hurricanes. So I'm just like in a very strangely zen place right now, because I know what's coming, so I'm prepared for it. And to be honest, I think this could end up being more fun than most people think for the Islanders, but we'll see. I'm probably wrong there.
Yeah, it rarely ever is fun in a pure sense. We're going to dive into a lot of topics, but reminder that we are on Patreon, patreon.com/islandersanxiety. Plans start as low as $2 a month. You get ad-free episodes, bonus podcasts, and a whole lot more. And let me tell you, we got a ton of stuff already set up for next week. We're going to have to try and find a way to work our mailbag episode into the playoff schedule. We've got a new book club coming out at the end of the month. And we've got a special episode with Art coming up specifically for the Patreon. So there's more stuff there. So sign up patreon.com/islandersanxiety. I agree with you. Like it is a sense of calm. It's a sense of relief. It's a sense of knowing that the next game doesn't necessarily matter and they can play it. And that game against the Penguins, a 5-4 win over the Penguins, definitely had a preseason-y vibe to it, except for all the weirdness that happened. Maybe we'll get to it at some point, but yeah, they beat the Devils 4-1. I mean, this might have been, I don't want to use the word easy because no game is easy, but like this might have been their surest win of the year. Like they came out, it was 2-0 Islanders after the first, and you know, then they pulled their same bullshit where they kind of started to give it back in the second, and sure enough, Timo Meier scores. Apparently he woke up in the second half of the season and ended up with basically 30 goals, which is kind of wild. And you thought, oh great, here they go, we're going to blow another one just before the end of the season. But they took it right back. Brock Nelson scored, and then Kyle McClain got the 4-1 goal. And yeah, okay, fine, it's 4-1, but that right there, you know, he scores in his home state, you know, where his dad played, was really, really cool. Plus, it was a nice goal. He kind of jammed it in, squeezing in after a shot from Lee, kind of went towards the net. It was great. Semyon Varlamov was really, really good. Jake Allen was not. They went 3-for-3 on the penalty kill. They scored a power play goal. You know, if the Islanders are going to play more games like that in the playoffs, then I think it will be a fun time, and I think they will be pretty good. But let me ask you this. So they win the game. They clinch third in the Metro. It's, you know, the next game really doesn't much matter. You know, they clinch in game 81 as opposed to game 82, which they did last year. At this point right now, with the Islanders clinching a playoff berth, after everything we've been through, and I'm going to bring that up again in a little bit, does clinching that playoff berth make this a successful season already, or do they need to go on some sort of run, you know, win a round or something in the playoffs to make this a successful season? Or is just clinching that playoff berth already be like, okay, listen, it was a crazy one, but can't say it wasn't unsuccessful. It was successful.
I don't know. I guess that's up to you, like you being whoever you are out there listening. I don't think that, I've kind of just stopped grading seasons as successes or failures, especially if like you get into the playoffs, because it's Barry Trotz has taught us that it's the journey, and I would tell you right now, like I would be, if this was our season wrap up show, right? Like the Islanders don't clinch a playoff, I'd be throwing stuff. I'd be so mad. I don't think that, like, the margin obviously is so thin. It's like 2 points or whatever. It's a couple wins. You know, it's funny to think about that overtime win in Philadelphia, how mad we were at the time. Mm. And Matt Strauss was the one who first kind of pointed this out to me, that like that overtime win, Brock Nelson scoring that goal, really changed the fortunes of the Islanders and Flyers completely. Mm. Where the Flyers missed the playoffs because they had to pull a goal. If they had won that game in regulation, like we're not in this weird universe, but
right.
I digress. I don't know if it's I don't want to call any season like a success or failure anymore, because
right,
like that it's been an absolutely trying, heavy year. But we watched every game. We've talked once, probably 1.5 times a week on average. Over the course of the season, whether it be on this show or, you know, the spinoffs or just random episodes where we needed to record like an emergency podcast or whatever. So I've had fun at times, and I've been down at times. So I don't know. I just the journey's just been crazy more than anything. I don't think just getting into the playoffs would make it a success or a failure. Like they could get swept and I'm going to be absolutely livid, or they could win the series and all of a sudden you're like, wow, this is a great season. So what I will say is what it's done more than anything is kind of solidified, I think, a one of the undercurrents of the show the past few years, which is, yeah, like this regime, this era has flaws to it. But now the Islanders have made the postseason 5 out of 6 seasons. Mm. 5 out of 6.
It's pretty good.
Since Lamoriello took over. And you could say, oh, like that shouldn't be the goal, make it the playoffs. And okay, yeah, I'm with you. I want to win a Stanley Cup as badly as anybody. But this team hasn't gone on a run like this since the 80s. That the last time they made the playoffs 5 out of 6 years was in the 80s. So this is still like a absolutely silver era of Islanders hockey.
Yeah.
So like when I look at that and this season now being one of the notches on the belt of this era, and you think now, huh, the only season that they didn't make the playoffs in this era was the crazy COVID.
Oh my God. Yeah.
You know, road trip. Like that's the only one. That is right. The outlier season. We were one. Remember the whole thing was like, is that really an outlier?
I call that the Murphy's Law season. Like yeah, just everything that could go wrong did.
And look, this season wasn't that far behind that, where we had a lot of stuff go our way, go the wrong way, but the Islanders were able to fight through it and get us here, and they still have a chance, and there's so many fan bases out there that would love to be in our position. Mm. But I don't think it's as to me at least, like I'm just very happy and grateful that the season ended here, because I spent a lot of time thinking about over the past few weeks what I would be feeling right now in this position had the Islanders gone through what they've gone through this season and put us through what they put us through as a fan base this season. And not been part of the dance. So I don't know. I guess it remains to be seen, or it just depends on how what you look at. But I'll never, ever, ever take a playoff berth for granted. As we talked about this a lot last year, like the whole ritual of playoff hockey is something that you should really cherish. Just ask Buffalo Sabres fans, right? Like it's absolutely something that you should never take for granted.
Well, and if you're
even Red Wings fans now, right? Like they made the playoffs 20 some years in a row and they haven't been in an 8 in a row. And so, right.
Yeah. I mean, I think you and I are old enough, you know, even though we're apart in age, we're old enough to remember when the Islanders didn't always make the playoffs or barely made the playoffs. And the other thing, too, I don't think there's anything wrong with making the playoffs because, you know, and just quote unquote, just making the playoffs because, like, this is, remember, last year was the first time they had not made it out of the first round. Like they made it out the first time and then they made it all the way to the semifinals the next 2 years. And then it was the disaster season. And then last year. So, you know, I think there's something to that, but I'm glad you are bringing this up because there's something I need to get off my chest. And I've seen this since Monday, since the clinching, and it kind of started bugging me. I've seen it online. I've seen it on various forums and heard it on certain, you know, in various podcasts and things like that. Like, the idea that because the Islanders made the playoffs that people were wrong or they need to, you know, apologize even facetiously to the Islanders. Like, oh, you know, I was wrong. I wrote them off and they proved me wrong. Like, I don't know. To me, this seems very strange. Like, we watched this season. We all know. You can go back through it. Just go look at the titles to the various episodes we've done this season to know what an insane ride this was. A waste of time. Now we're different. Patrick Waugh is here. Like, it's been an insane season full of, what was the final tally on blown leads? It was like 23 or something, right? Yeah. I mean, how many in the third periods? Like, they had the worst penalty kill in the league for the entire season. They shit themselves in what will most likely be the most watched NHL game of the entire season, right? They fired their coach. they lost to teams that were below them in the standings. They completely no-showed when, you know, a win would have done them wonders. Like this stuff, don't let the X in the standings gaslight you into not thinking that this stuff happened. It happened. And if you were mad because you were excited to watch your team and they just completely no-showed or blew another lead to the Sharks or something and it upset you or pissed you off or made you frustrated, that's okay. You're okay. It's okay to feel that way. Like you don't have to, you know, all of a sudden declare that, you know, people, you know, who bailed on the season or were mad about this were wrong. Why would you think that? We're fans. Why, if you're not going to get crazy because your team blows a lead to the Sharks and Devils within 3 weeks, why, what's the point of being a fan? Like, I don't understand. And then, like, you get these people who are like, I never gave up. I always believed in them. Okay, well, that's great. Like, John Ledecky's not going to come to your house with a jersey that says never gave up 24 on the back and take your picture. Like, That's not how it works. You know, we're all just fans. We're all sitting at home watching this team play, or UBS Arena watching this team play. I don't get the rush to be like, you know, I never gave up, or to be like, you know, oh, I wrote these guys off and they proved me wrong. Okay, who cares? Like, they're here. Like, it was crazy. This season is crazy. Why wouldn't you just say it? Man, this season is crazy. I'm glad they made the playoffs, and now I can breathe a sigh of relief. I don't know. It's strange to me.
It is strange, and I agree with you. And I thought that, you know, one of my friends had pointed out that, like, the Islanders had everybody afterwards said, you know, Cal Clutterbuck said everyone, you know, kind of wrote us off, right, and whatever. Like, there was a reason we wrote you off. Like, there was an app. There were 23 reasons we wrote you up. Like, this isn't anyone's fault. This was a crazy season. Couldn't make it up scenario. And it somehow ended up with you guys in the playoffs. I think Rob Taub had put out like a tweet right after they clinched with all the kind of crazy stats from the 32nd ranked penalty kill, the dash 21 goal differential, the blown leads, the fact that they went 59 games without an empty net goal.
Yeah, I mean, I completely forgot about that.
Right, remember when the plane like didn't take off correctly early on in the year or something, like at MacArthur Airport, that the Islanders plane had to like retake off or something. Yeah. You know, there's been weird stuff, and I don't think it's an apology situation at all, but it is I think that fans can like be proud of themselves for getting through it. And whether that getting through it means you didn't give up on them at all and you always thought they were going to make the playoffs, or you gave up on them back in January, got sucked back in, pulled back out, sucked back in, it's fine. Like, but you got through it, and now the team you love is in the playoffs. The difference is like, it's the annoying part about that is like the internal, like you're not a real fan. It's like when people yell at other fans for leaving early when a team's down 3-0. Like, who cares? Like, it's not gonna affect anyone else. Like, let them drive home, and maybe they're just tired and want to go home. And when it's coming from the external sources, especially the ones in particular that we like to kind of point out, it becomes a little bit of a different scenario. But once again, it's not asking for an apology. It's just like, you don't know the story. So don't all of a sudden, because the Islanders clinched the playoffs and you need to put your two cents worth in, start doing it. You just don't know the story. So don't try to sum up what the Islanders season and the Islander fan base has just been through, because you don't know. You don't understand what it was like to watch this team. I listened to this team while I was in Mexico in a hotel room in the dark. I couldn't get a TV feed, so I was listening to Chris King and Greg Picker call the Nashville Predators game, and I'm like, they're up 1-0. They're gonna break this Predators hoodoo. This is great. Oh my God, it's 1-1. That's okay. They're gonna get a point out of this. Matt Martin turns the puck over. I'm sad. Vacation. I cannot let this ruin my vacation. That would be the most pathetic thing. And I've done a lot of pathetic things where this team is concerned. Trust me. But that would be take the list. And then 2 days later, like, they lost to the Blackhawks while I was down there. Like, you don't understand what this fan base has been dragged through, right? So if you want to be upset at that kind of stuff, go for it. But it's not like demanding an apology because you thought, you know, your friend said, God, I'm done with this team. I fielded so many texts throughout the season, like, I'm done, I'm tapped out, I just can't deal with it anymore. And the answer is like, yeah, absolutely. Why the hell would you keep, what about that, them blowing a lead to the Seattle Kraken after they just blew a lead to the Vancouver Canucks the night before at 1 a.m, makes you want to stick around? None of this. Yeah. So it has nothing to do with that. And I understand what Clutterbuck's trying to do and the team's trying to do. You want to like galvanize around that ethos, and I get it. But instead of that, just be like, we're the fucking Islanders. Like, people are, no matter what, like, I've done a bunch of preview stuff. I've been on some radio hits, and everyone has the same thing. Like, the Islanders carry some weight to them now because they've made the playoffs 5 out of 6 years. They've been to 2 conference finals in that span. They gave the Hurricanes a pretty good, you know, run for their money last year. Like, this team is not an easy out by any means. They swept the Penguins in the first of that playoff run of this, you know, 5 and 6 playoff series, streak. Like, this is not your Mike Sillinger, Kip Miller Islanders. Like, this is a formidable group that has a reputation. So that's what I'm trying to cling to here. It's like, this is a team that's going to show up in Carolina, and everybody on this team has playoff experience with one another to the most part. Like, and the ones that don't, whether it be Robert Portuzo, he's won a Stanley Cup. Mike Riley, he's played against the Islanders when they, you know, kicked the shit out of the Bruins. He heard us all with our fangs out, baying for blood, screaming New York Saints at his coach, right? Like, this is a group that has been together in these spots before, bar like what, Kyle McLean? Like, this is, he's the only one who hasn't played a playoff game with the Islanders or against them or won a Stanley Cup. Like, this is a group like I actually am choosing to believe in for those reasons. And because, holy shit, like, they just went through the most ridiculous season to get to 94 points I've ever seen.
Yeah,
which is exactly where everybody expected them. They're like, they'll probably finish between like 88 and 94 points. Like, they're just who we thought they were. No, they're not. They're psychopaths.
Yeah, right. I'm surprised more people haven't been like, so what's the deal with the Islanders? Because like nobody knows, like nobody understands, you know?
You want to know what I think?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people watch them play the Rangers on Saturday and then watch and clinch against the Devils. And they're like, oh yeah, it looks like the Islanders.
Yeah.
And those were probably the first two games that they watched all season.
Right. Because they didn't watch the other 80 insane games.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. They're like, oh, yeah, you can totally tell me that, you know, these are the Islanders. Like, yeah.
They have no idea that two guys with a podcast coined the phrase playing like assholes as the only way to describe what this team is like when you watch them play every single day. They play like assholes, like, and they played like assholes in a little bit in the Devils game. They played like assholes in the Penguins game. Like, they still was doing it even after they clinched. It was so funny. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm also kind of making, you know, straw man arguments against, you know, nobody's on Twitter, but like, it was driving me crazy. I'm like, dude, I'm not apologizing to anybody. Right.
Like, none of that. Like, and I do feel like this more than any playoff berth that I can remember. This is just a blank slate. Like, I think that's part of the relief of this all, right? Like, none of those games really matter anymore.
Yeah.
They're going into game one in Carolina, and it does not matter that the Islanders blew a point to the San Jose Sharks. It doesn't matter that Pierre Engvall turned a puck over after the Islanders fought their way back into Patrick Waugh night at Montreal, right? Those games don't matter. They have no effect anymore, because if the Islanders lose game one, we're not saying, man, if they only got a point against Montreal, right?
Yeah.
Right. We're not thinking that anymore. We're thinking, all right, we got to get the next one. We got to get our way back into the series. So that in itself is such a relief. And I felt that come off my shoulders after they beat the Devils. And I think that's why these past few days have just been so enjoyable as a hockey fan, just to be like, I don't have to worry about that baggage. I dropped that baggage off.
Yeah.
I walked up to the that thing at the airport, and I put my bags down. I put down the watching them almost blow that game to the Ducks early on in the year. I watched that no show effort against the Minnesota Wild that was part of that 7 games losing streak. I watched all that and I just said, it's done. Like, it's all now, it's just footnotes in like my Islander fan history. And if that feels so good to just get rid of that. So I really feel good about that, at least. Like, maybe that's what's clouding my pessimism here, you know?
Well, no, I don't think that's a bad thing. So what you're saying is I can finally uninstall the visual of Cal Clutterbuck not getting the puck deep against the Avalanche.
Right.
From 6 months ago.
The 34 penalties on when we had power plays that led to 4-on-3 goals or the other way. And
it's funny that you said the no-show against Minnesota. My go-to no-show rhyme there. Actually, I have two. The one against the Flames and the one against the Devils, both on like matinees. Those are my go-to. Like, really, guys? You're gonna no-show these two games?
The last time the Islanders had a kick-your-feet-up win was against the Winnipeg Jets, right? Before that Devils game.
Right,
Me and my friend were trying to figure out, before that Devils game, I was talking like, wouldn't it be so nice if they just finally got a win like that? And we were just like, we haven't had one all year. And then we realized, oh no, we did against Winnipeg, but we don't remember it because the next day the season ended when they lost to the Devils. So it's another one, like that game doesn't matter anymore. The blown lead to the Devils early in the season doesn't matter anymore. That is, it's so nice to feel that way and to think, okay, now they just got to go into Carolina and pull the upset, which is, it's daunting and whatever, but It has nothing to do with the baggage, the blown leads to the Red Wings, the terrible performance against the Red Wings in the biggest game of the season, the biggest game at Joe Louis Arena since or Little Caesars Arena ever.
That was supposed to propel the Red Wings into the playoffs. They won. And I guess they were in eighth or whatever at that point. Yeah. Wow. You're right. Wow. That is so funny that just the whole script flipped like that night. Yeah. Man, I would love to. Maybe we'll go back and watch that game over the summer for the Patreon or something like that. Just go back and watch it.
Yeah, we'll have to go through the season and like be like, we'll do like four or five of these
games
and just, but none of it matters right now. That's so great because it's mattered since October 10th.
Oh my God.
Or October 14th till April 14th or well, April 15th, whatever it was, 6 months. All that stuff mattered.
Well, and to your point from earlier, it mattered going back to last year where they played 82 playoff games and then six more in the actual playoffs. So, yeah, no, you're 100% right. Let's talk about the Hurricanes in a second. Might as well just finish things out and talk about this incredibly bizarre and stupid Penguins game that meant nothing but was kind of, you know, packed to the gills with weird events. The Islanders won 5-4. Ruslan Ishakov was called up. Shout out to Alan Furing for making sure we all say that right. It's Ishakov with a ha in the middle there. But Anders Lee, for personal reasons, sat out. Matt Barzal, Noah Dobson did, although Dobson apparently is skating. And, you know, again, the Islanders looked great in the beginning. Nelson scored a beautiful goal. They looked good. And then all of a sudden, Ricard Raquel tied it with a bizarre goal. And then it was pretty much mostly Penguins early in the second period. Apparently, Evgeny Malkin can just kick pucks into the net now, and it's okay. When Brock Nelson does it, it's not okay. Casey Zizekas had a nice tip. This guy, Valtteri Polstanen, only scores against the Islanders, which is incredibly irritating. Palmieri scores his 30th goal, and I'll take all the credit in the world for that because here we were complaining about him having only 13 goals through like 40 games of the season, and the next 40 games he had 17 or whatever. So he really has turned it on, and he's just second half Kyle, and hopefully that continues in the playoffs where he's always been really good. But it was 3-3 at the end of two. Sam Bolduc, of all people, makes it 4-3 Islanders. Jeff Carter scores in what was apparently going to be his final game of his career to tie the game. And then Simon Holmstrom, the beautiful goal from Nelson, and Ishakov scores with about 5 minutes to go. Sidney Crosby gets awarded a penalty shot because apparently Brock Nelson covered the puck with his hand in the crease. Sorokin made a save. He was pretty good. He made 41 saves. And yeah, he got beat four times, but he was really good. He had to make 41 saves. He was pretty busy, much busier than Alex Nedeljkovic, who only made 27. Did feel like a preseason game, but it was really dumb. There were a lot of post-hit. Ishakov showed a lot of energy, had a spirited game. He's small, man. He is small. But he showed a lot of spunk out there. And Oliver Wahlstrom didn't. That's all I'm going to say about that. Then they shook hands with Jeff Carter afterwards. They made him the third star. It was nice. You know, I have no particular affinity for Jeff Carter, but it was nice. I thought that it was pretty cool that the team gave him the team that gets called the most classless team and fan base in the universe when the Leafs play here. All of a sudden, is the classiest team on earth when they want to shake hands with a Penguin who's going to retire. So it was a bizarre game. You didn't want to talk about it before we came on. Do you have a single thought about this in strange game that now, frankly, doesn't really even exist? Like, who cares?
No, I was happy to, I watched the first 3 minutes to watch Ishakov, and that was it. And then I just had texted a couple people, like, let me know that everybody gets through this game. Okay. Of course, Someone doesn't. And JG Pageau.
I think that was precautionary.
We were hoping. Yeah. But, so I turned on like the last 30 seconds or so. I tuned back in like right before the Crosby penalty shot, just because I wanted to see like the end of the season kind of stuff, right. And I was just dying laughing, like, "Oh, this is so, what a perfect way for this insane season to end in with a meaningless penalty shot from Sid the Kid."
Yeah.
I did kind of give some thought to going to this game, just so I could watch and laugh at Sidney Crosby play a completely meaningless game. Like I imagined it like in my head. I was in like a small local like high school arena watching this guy play. I'm wearing like a leather bomber jacket with a little plastic like flask bottle of vodka, cheap vodka, in my coat pocket, smoking cigarettes and just cracking up at Crosby like a true deadbeat. He could hear me in this daydream. Right. And honestly, the daydream was enough satisfaction for me. So Yeah, because after all, you know, we by the way, we're not afraid of those hockey gods anymore. We did our Master Pence Theater. Mm-hmm. We were a little nervous if we're like tempting fate a bit with them right. still in the race and all that. And they went 0-2 right after that, or 1-2 and got eliminated after the Master Pence Theater we did. And it felt really good to see a lot of that, a lot of those athletic articles resurface from
yeah
this the past year with the Penguins. So that was really it. Like, I've got nothing to say about the game specifically. I'm just happy they got through it. It's over.
We also should shout out the reffing crew of Wes McCauley and Kelly Sutherland, who decided in this meaningless game to review not one, not two, but three goals for various things, which of course prolonged the agony for the Penguins and their riders. And again, Nelson's goal was called back. Malkin's counted for some reason. There was another one that I think got called back or counted as well. I'm not even sure. Oh no, sorry. The Penguins lost the challenge because Mike Riley kept it in, or they tried to take away Palmieri's 30th goal, but they lost that challenge. And then the Islanders got a power play. So it was just it was strange. And yeah, it was nice to see all those articles pop up again. The Riley Smith Renaissance painting tweet will never go away. And I was glad to have found one that was like, it was from Rob Rossi, who was like, Riley Smith might be the worst acquisition I've ever seen in 20 years covering the Penguins. So it was beautiful, beautiful bookends to the season for them. And I said this on Twitter, and I mean it. If Crosby had scored on that penalty shot, we never would have heard the end of this from 32 Thoughts. It would have been insufferable. It would have been.
Man, if only the loser point didn't exist, that penalty shot could have propelled this Penguins team into the playoffs, and who knows where Sid could take them from then. So now we're just left to wonder, you know, what could have been.
Exactly.
Please.
So there you go. But so that closes the book on that. So we have a few minutes here before Art joins us. So let's look ahead at the Carolina Hurricanes. This is the third time the Islanders have faced them in the playoffs. Obviously they're 0-2 going into this. The Hurricanes came in second place in the division. They've got 100 and something points, whatever it is, 112, I think it is, whatever it is. It's not as much as the Rangers had, but it's a lot. And listen, they're a good team. Like, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that the Hurricanes are not a good team. They had 111 points. Sorry, I was off by one. So, you know, they're 17 points ahead of the Islanders there. And there's a reason for that. They were really good. It's plus 63 goal differential, which is actually better than the Rangers, who only plus 53. That being said, I said this every time they've played the Hurricanes. I think the Islanders have a chance. And I mean, the Athletic is already up to their, or I should say Art's colleagues at the Athletic are already up to their usual tricks. I believe they have the Hurricanes winning 80% of the time. You know, they've got them basically winning it. The Islanders have no chance as far as their model is concerned. I think they always have a chance. And I, you know, I'm curious to ask Art, like, what this team thinks about going into another series with the Hurricanes. Should they be favored? Absolutely, they should be. And should they be a Stanley Cup favorite? Yeah, probably. But, you know, this team is hard to figure. And again, we've seen different modes. We see them win 7 in a row. We saw them lose 6 in a row. We saw them win, you get points in 9 straight, as just now, you know, winning 8 out of 9. So, I don't know. I mean, how do you handicap this series? I mean, it's most likely going to go the way of the other two, but I don't know. I kind of feel like maybe these guys have learned.
I think that this is like the Islanders, the Hurricanes are such an outlier with like the way they play, the environment down there and all that, that the Islanders are just used to it. Like they've seen this team so much over the past few years that I just don't think that they're going to be caught off guard at all by that. And I think that's something that's getting overlooked a little bit. That this team seems to just be in a rhythm right now where they're not going to get rattled by anything. You also look at what people are kind of pointing to with the Islanders are, and rightfully so, they're like, oh, the defensive improvements under Wah, like make them a little bit more stingy and harder. Maybe that'll help them win a game or two in the series. But for us who have been watching this game, I think actually the most notable developments for the Islanders over the last 10 games or so is that Pierre Engvall has found his form and he's found it alongside Anders Lee, and it's no coincidence that those two are playing on the same line with JG Pageau. So that line just has worked pretty well, I think. And that's also allowed Matt Barzal to be reunited with Bo Horvat and Casey Cizikas, right. And that line's been doing just fine. You talked about Palmieri. And the Islanders now have, a fourth line that's doing a really good job with McLean down there. Yeah. So I think that they're settled. Like, this is a very settled Islanders team. And the other point people keep trying to make, because the Islanders, everyone who I've talked to when I was on some, you know, like I said, radio shows, I did some videos with other companies that are asking for input on the series. And everyone keeps bringing up, well, the Hurricanes didn't have Svechnikov last season. And they didn't have Guentzel. And I'm like, yeah, that's true. And the Islanders gave them a hard time, but the Hurricanes certainly are better now. But I think the Islanders are better now than that team, too, because that team had Matt Barzal come back for game one after 2 months off, and he was not even close to himself. That team was without Alex Romanov. Remember, we had to play with Bolduc?
That's right. Oh, my God. Series. Yeah, he played the whole series.
That series for a while. Yeah. Until, like, what, game five, I think Romanov came back in.
Yeah.
So, like, the Islanders are a better version of the Islanders. They have a better coach. But the Hurricanes are also a better version of the Hurricanes. So both teams got better, I think. So I don't think the gap is you know, crazy far, like a lot of people are saying. Like you put it, the Hurricanes are the better team here. But there's something very serene about everybody picking the Hurricanes. Because last year, if you remember, a lot of folks said, I think the Islanders can do it. I think the Islanders are a good bet. I think the Islanders have every chance. They've got Sorokin. They've got a huge goaltending edge. No Svechnikov. The Islanders were underdogs, but I think that they're live in this matchup. And as nice as that was to hear, it's much better to be here in this spot where you're like, there's like nobody talking about the Islanders winning this game. Right. It's how far can the Hurricanes go? It's how quickly are they going to dispatch this team? And that's totally fine with me. It really makes my day go a lot easier. Like, cause I'm not reading, I wonder why this person believes in the Islanders. Yeah. And like I said, I'm totally prepared for all this stuff now. Like I think John Zella put out a really good Twitter thread the other day, just like about where a lot of hockey content and sports content, I think in general is, talking about how all of us used to really invest a lot of time and even money and stuff in reading and hockey content and just we were ravenous because we didn't really have any coverage down here, especially on the island and especially of the Islanders. So I think a lot of us just by habit gobbled up everything, and that's how we end up, you know, knowing Luke Fox Jukebox's personalities as well as we do, right? But he put out something about how there's really no meaningful content outside of like this very small universe of people. And I would just, my advice, you can do whatever you want. You can be whatever kind of fan you are. But for me, I'll say that it's been really nice to not go looking for that stuff, to not go read series previews from Sportsnet or wherever, right? If I trust the person's take, like we're going to have Art on, I'd love to hear his two cents, of course. But there's a very few people that I would think, I'm going to like get something out of reading this about the Islanders. Because, like you said before, those people didn't watch this team completely no-show on Kids Day against the Calgary Flames, right? Like, they don't know.
Right.
Then they also didn't watch them kick a kid into high gear over the past, you know, couple weeks before the playoffs start. So I'm in a good place right now. And it's crazy to say that, like, because they're a big underdog, but I'm just in a really good place with how I feel like going into this playoffs. I don't know if that means they'll win or lose or anything. I'm very like secure in how I'm approaching it from a fan perspective. So I'm just excited for it more than anything. I'm really excited to watch this series. I think that it's all upside from here. And I, you know, this is it. This is the last ride, I think, for, you know, we say it every year, but this is the last ride for like the Matt Martins of the world. It could be for a couple other guys here.
Sure.
So I'm going to try to watch and enjoy as much of it as I can. And, you know, when the puck drops and we hear that stupid siren and whatever, that'll change a little bit. But until then, I'm good, man. I'm happy. I'm excited. I'm talking Islanders with everybody all day. It's the playoffs. I'm really excited.
Yeah, that's the thing that makes me the most scared is what you just said, the atmosphere, I've said it a million times. I'll keep saying it. Rod Brind'Amour has that entire organization and that entire fan base focused on the refs, on making sure that the refs know that they are in a hostile environment. And anytime a Hurricane player is looked at the wrong way, they're going to want to call. Anytime the Hurricanes get called for an actual penalty, they're going to say the refs are in their pocket. They're making it up. They don't know what they're doing. And so the Islanders are going to have to fight through that. And I think they will. Like you said, they won, I think, twice down in Raleigh, right, this season. So maybe they're you know, kind of getting the message.
They won a game down there last series, too, and they should have won a couple more. And I'll tell you one thing that's not lost on me, and because I've been thinking about that, too. Hmm. There's a huge difference between having Lane Lambert as your head coach in that environment and Patrick Waugh. Another thing I'm very excited to watch is Patrick Waugh coaching New York Islanders hockey game. It's Zach Parise's last regular season game tonight as we record this. He has already announced. We've talked about how badly we wanted to watch Zach Parise like forecheck as a New York Islander in the playoffs and have it like, you know, have him hear the crowd get behind him as he gets a puck in deep in a big moment in like a game 3 or 4. That's like what I feel about Waugh right now. I cannot wait for him, you know, in those crucial like business end part of the series, those press conferences where it becomes like a little tit for tat war of words.
Oh, definitely. Coaches, yeah.
Him and Brind'Amour. Mm. Oh God. It's going to be great.
we'll have to see what the coaching equivalent is. I got my 2 Stanley Cup rings clogging my ears is going to be, but no, that's true. And I still have trouble kind of getting a read on him as a coach, but he'll definitely make adjustments. He's not afraid to do that. We've seen him do that not only before games, but during games, and that Lambert was not the type to do that again, sort of just vocally. And in terms of like, you know, getting the fan base behind him, Waugh obviously is better at it than Lambert was. And I think, you know, he's coming into this, not that Lane Lambert obviously hasn't been in playoff games. I mean, he's stood next to Barry Trotz throughout, I'm sure, a million playoff games, but I think Waugh again comes from this perspective of, you know, having played in the biggest games, and he kind of knows what they're probably thinking. And I think he also has an idea that, you know, these guys, like you said, it's gonna be the last ride for a few of these guys. We don't know. We may not see Cal Clutterbuck next year, or Matt Martin, or maybe somebody else. You never know. So I think they're going to work on it. And I think they're going to, you know, listen, I'm not going to sit here and say that the Islanders are going to win the series. Like that's ludicrous. But I do think they have a chance. If they go 7 games, you know, I think anything can happen.
Like something I've been thinking about is like, I'm trying to change my approach from, can we win 4 out of 7 to, can they win game 1? Right. Mm-hmm. And the Islanders absolutely can go into on Saturday and continue to play the way they are and get the break or two that they haven't got against this team in either playoff series and win. And, right. And once you do that, then all of a sudden all bets are off because the Hurricanes need to win to avoid going down 2-0 at home. And you know, So I'm trying to do that as much, like, and it sounds so cliche and corny, but it was another Trotz thing. It's just like staying in the moment and that. And so I'm really not even thinking about the task is, can you win 4 out of 7 against the Hurricanes, right, who are a much better team than you? It's, can you win 1 out of 1 and do that and put some serious pressure on a team that has huge expectations and has a reputation of kind of wilting in these playoff games. So that's how I'm looking at it. So, and it's helpful. I think it's been really helpful to think about that, to like, just look forward to just game 1 rather than this entire series.
Hmm. Gotta love going back to Trotz and stuff after 2 coaches now, since Trotz, but let me ask you this. Another thing though, that I've seen come up, and I don't necessarily disagree. Again, the Islanders made the playoffs in a season, which it seemed at different points that they wouldn't make the playoffs. Are they playing with house money right now? Like, is it not that I'm saying, you know, they don't have to win this series. It would be great if they did. But like, is it a situation now where you just said it, the Hurricanes are the ones that have all the pressure on them. This is a team that is expected to go far, expected to challenge for the Stanley Cup. They have not made the Cup final since they won it back in 2006. So, I mean, it's been a long time and they keep flaming out in the second round or a couple of conference final appearances in there. This is the team that has all the pressure on it. The Islanders do not. They have been through pressure every single game. Sometimes they come up, you know, with the win. Sometimes, most of the time they didn't. But now it's like, well, you know, nobody expected us to be here, so now we can do whatever we want. Do you think that that's going to have an effect on this series? Do you think that could, you know, maybe help. Now, the problem is if they win game one, now the pressure is on them. But yeah, I think, you know, that might be a thing.
I don't disagree with you at all. And I think that maybe that's part of why my, you know, once again, my optimism is clouding my pessimism here is that because of what we've just been through as a fan base and this team has been through and what we've watched 82 times or 81 times, I should say, this season is that all of a sudden game one and the playoffs don't seem like a boogeyman. Like it, right. It doesn't seem like it seems like, you think this is hard? Try having a must win game against the Chicago Blackhawks at home and you're down 1-0 because Peter Mrazek is standing on his head. You think this is hard? Right. Try going down twice to the Montreal Canadiens in the same situation. And Sam Montembeau is doing that. Like this isn't hard. And that's almost why I'm like, I'm not scared by game one. I feel like I don't even need to watch it. I feel like I could just be like, just enjoy it because it's not going to be as harrowing, and maybe this is famous last words, but I feel like it's not going to be as scary as watching this team play a must win game at home against the Rangers up 3-0 and the refs getting involved. Right. I've been through hell already. This is not hell. This is Raleigh. Like I'm okay with this.
This is not hell. This is Raleigh. There you go. Put that on the town plaque outside. This is not hell. This is Raleigh. No, I think that's
true. War quote.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said before, like I feel like these guys, you know, between last year and the games this year, I don't think Raleigh scares them anymore. It scares me a little bit, but I'm glad it doesn't scare them. Okay, we're gonna take a break. We're gonna come back with Arthur Staple. We're gonna ask him a bunch of questions, and we will see, what he can tell us from inside the Islanders' locker room. And see where his brain is at and maybe where the Islanders' brains are at going into this playoff series. Okay, so meet us on the other side. Thanks. And now a word from our sponsors. First is VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, jerseys, mugs, and more featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. Vintage Ice Hockey also carries our Al Arbor and the Island merch, and our portion of the sales always go directly to the Center for Dementia Research. Use the code ANXIETY20 to save 20% off an order of 2 items. That is VintageIceHockey.com. Try wines from the Pinot Project. They offer a rosé, a Pinot Grigio, and a Pinot Noir that was named a 2022 Top 100 Best Buy by Wine Enthusiast Magazine. All are delicious, priced at less than $15 a bottle, and available at local wine shops and at UBS Arena. Learn more at thepinotproject.com. Please drink responsibly. Okay, we're back, and we are joined by one of our all-time favorites to get our biannual, triannual, semi-annual Islanders check-in. He is Arthur Staple of The Athletic. Art, before we get into any of that, how was your first year covering both teams for The Athletic? I'm sure you're absolutely thrilled that they both made the playoffs, and now you can have a bunch more games to cover both of these teams, but it must have been exhausting. I'm exhausted just asking this question.
It wasn't bad. You know, the beginning of the year, I think, was difficult because the Rangers got off to such a good start, and the Islanders were the Islanders at the beginning of the year from pretty much from moment one of the season. So it was, you know, you're making a choice. It's not something Islander fans love to hear, but I think common sense kind of tells you that the Rangers are a bit more of a draw, especially for us at the Athletic. So the focus was more on the Rangers. And then, as the season went along, my colleague Peter Baugh moved from Denver to join the fray here in New York. So that helped out a lot. And then the coaching change really, I think, kind of, our national hockey profile management on down said, "Oh, Patrick Waugh, we know that guy," you know? So, that made them a bit more compelling of a story. And really the last few weeks of kind of bouncing back and forth, went from thinking like, yeah, maybe they got a shot to make the playoffs to they definitely don't have a chance to make the playoffs. So I can be here to gather stuff for the postmortem. And then lo and behold, whatever, 9-1-1 later.
Right.
Here we are, and that creates a whole new, you know, set of interesting stories to do. And you know, Islanders Carolina, I think, is not maybe the sexiest matchup. Mm-hmm. And I think we all, the three of us, have discussed on the show, off the show, in many different communication forums, that the Islanders' profile in general has not changed a whole lot in 6 years. But this is, whatever, five playoff trips in 6 years. And to my mind, they're still a good story. And it's a very familiar room to be in. And some of the old, you know, jokes and old topics of conversation can pop back up with the same people I've been talking to for, in some cases, over a decade. Mm. And there's something quite comforting in that as I get into my old age here, that when you go into a room and you see support staff that you know, and players that you know, and management that you know, that you know, I think there's a level of, not maybe not necessarily trust, but at least comfort, I guess.
That, sure.
They know your flaw. They know all your faults. You know plenty of their faults, and we've kept them secret for a long time. And really, you know, covering the Islanders in the heyday of Twitter and things like that has made the audience for me much more Islander. Much more familiar too with Islander fans. You know, I get a lot of grief. I actually got some grief in the Rangers locker room. The other day, Chris Kreider and I were talking, and he said, I told him that I was going to cover the Islanders playoffs. He's like, "Are you an Islanders fan?" I said, "Why would you say that?" And he said, "Oh," and Jimmy VC said things. He's like, "Jimmy said you were an Islanders fan." And I was like, "Well, Jimmy spends a little too much time online, clearly." I did not address it with Jimmy VC at all, but it did crack me up that even inside the locker room, away from social media, it's the, "Oh, you're a fan of this team, you're a fan of that team."
Right.
So that's always hilarious.
Well, now what you need is like Simon Holmstrom to come up to you and be like, "Aren't you a Rangers fan?" Like,
"What are you doing here?"
Yeah, exactly. You don't know what you're talking about. That's really funny. Jimmy, come on, man. You went to Harvard. You got to be smarter than that. Come on. But that's really funny. That's great. And, you know, it's funny, too. Like, I would think, too, I mean, what you're describing is like, for somebody that doesn't necessarily have an office, quote unquote, like, that's kind of your office. Like, you just got to go there and everybody knows each other and, you know, you're familiar and it's comforting and, you know, you kind of get there. So it's funny that your office, you have two offices and you're comfortable in both of those places. And so,
and they hate the people in the other office. So
yes. That's amazing. Yeah. That's I would expect nothing less. So I'm going to get right to the chase and the big question I think we ask. And like you said, this has been a wild season of, they're making the playoffs, they're not going to make the playoffs. Holy shit, they're going to play the Rangers. Nope, they're not going to make the playoffs. Oh, now they're in the playoffs. Did you get a sense from being in that Islanders locker room that those guys also recognize what an insane roller coaster of a season this was? Like, Thomas Hickey talked about this the other day. He's like, you know, when you're a player, you're focusing on that game, keeping it, you know, even keel and all that stuff. And now as a broadcaster, he's living and dying with the team like he never had before. And he's like, "Oh man, this is exhausting." And, you know, he has Butch and Brendan, and they're like, "Yeah, this is kind of how it is." Do you get a sense from these guys that they too are like, "Man, we gotta straight up, we gotta, you know, get off this train"? Or do you think that they just, again, take it one game at a time and they just kind of forget about the previous game or the next game?
I think it was hard to do before the coaching change, and this is not a knock on Lane Lambert. Nobody's saying that he, you know, I wasn't in the room very much. I wasn't in the room during their meetings, obviously. Right. He's not accentuating the mistakes they made, the blown leads, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know how you have to address it. And it happens so often that I imagine it becomes a vicious cycle of, we can't do this thing. We did this thing again. The coach is going to talk to us about it again. We're going to get pissed about him talking to us about it again. And then we're going to go out and do it again the next night. So I think that, you know, what the guys have said a lot and what I kind of got a little bit into in the Patrick Waugh story I wrote the other day, or today, I guess, is he has been incredibly positive. And he has been, "Let's not talk about, you know, the video sessions are not, let's point out what we've done wrong," which is, not many coaches do that. Mm. And I think he clearly, I'm sort of psychologically you know, assigning some things to him that maybe are not necessarily true. But I think his transition from the NHL, where it wasn't the smoothest ride with Colorado, back to the team that he coaches and owns in Quebec, in the Quebec League, you're dealing with children, essentially. You're dealing with teenagers. Right. If you're going to go negative, it's going to be difficult for you. You're not going to get a lot out of them. So I think that's where he seemed to kind of become a little bit more positive, a little bit more modern, I think, in his approach to younger athletes. And I think he's carried it over where he's tried very hard. And I think he was whether it was conversations with Lou Lamoriello before he came on or kind of studying what had happened with the team, I think he knew that they were a pretty fragile group with the way that they had played, and not, you know, they hadn't been awful. They just were good. And then they were bad in the same game, sometimes from shift to shift. And I think that creates such a lack of confidence in your ability. So you see the result where they're up in games and playing really well, and then they just stop playing. But I think he grasped that very quickly, that they needed that sort of reinforcement. And I think it changed a lot of the way that they played. Just the psyche of the team was, oh yeah, we're not horseshit. We're not defined by blowing 20 leads in the third period or 15, two or three goal leads. Like, we could actually be good. And the way that the hilarious thing is that they've gotten back to being, you know, when they're through a lot of these wins the last 6 weeks, they're really playing very much, especially the last 10 or 11 games, they're playing very much like the Barry Trotz teams of 18, yes. 19 and 19, 20, which is they're absorbing a ton of pressure and pucks and just like, and then scoring goals. And you're just like, oh yeah, like that, of course they're going to go down and Kyle McLean's going to throw a blind backhand pass right on Simon Holmstrom's tape in the slot. Like, yeah, that's just what happens. So it is fascinating to me, the not just the roller coaster of the results and the way that they've played, but just the emotions of this season. And I think maybe better even than the changes he's tried to make structurally. And I think Roy's even kind of said it. It's just like they got their identity back. I think that was JG Pageau that said that to me. Like he allowed them to get their identity back, and the frustration at times, you know, when I would pop in every few weeks, I'd probably written some harsh columns, and I could sense there was a little bit of tension. You know, I'd sat down to talk to Anders Lee, and he was a frustrated guy. Like, he did not have a great season. I'm sure he would be the first to acknowledge it. But he's giving what he can give, and he's been an incredibly positive impact these last 10 games. And I think he's kind of emblematic of the whole group that they've played like crap a lot of the season, some of them, but they all still matter. And it's still a team that every guy has to be pulling on the rope for them to be successful. And that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not even just the identity too. Like, Dan and I throughout the season have kind of talked about, at one point we dubbed it a season of rock bottoms, and that makes them these guys who we've grown to love. Like, we love this core. We want so badly to watch Anders Lee hand a Stanley Cup to Matt Martin or Cal Clutterbuck or something like that. But there was a point this season, and we weren't the only people talking about it, like, wondering, are these guys tainting their entire legacy with this crazy season? They're just putting us through this bizarre hellscape right now. And I think there is something to be said, and Dan was alluding to this earlier, that because they've been through that, I actually don't think that going into PNC Arena and dealing with the rightful Stanley Cup favorites is going to feel like that daunting. You know, I was just joking around before you came on that, like, it's not going to be harder than beating the Blackhawks in that game. Like, they were down 1-0 in that game. I could have sworn they were never going to score. So I feel like, and I don't know, you know, this is obviously never going to show up in projections and models and stuff, but I do wonder what your thoughts are on if this team is kind of just in this weird, unique headspace where they've already been through like the hardest part. Yeah. So none of this is going to seem all that, you know, crazy to them. And it's not to prove people wrong. It's more that we've just been there. We've been through a lot worse than than going through game one in Raleigh.
Yeah, and I think, you know, look, they should be the underdogs in this metrically, data, results, eye test. Carolina is a better team. They have been a better team this entire season. So, you know, when you have a, whatever it is, a 17-point gap between two teams, it's not a coin flip. It shouldn't be. But I think there are things like that, Mike, that, yes, they've seen it all this year. They've done it all, good and bad, mostly bad, but they still made the playoffs. It's not like, you know, if I'm the Washington Capitals and I'm facing a Ranger team where everything has 98% of their season has just gone spectacularly well, and the Caps are coming in with the worst goal differential in the history of playoff teams, and two of their young defensemen are injured, and every one of their decent players is 35 or older, and they're riding a career back, you know, AHL goalie into the playoffs with their high-priced number one goalie hasn't played in a month. That's different to me than what the Islanders are doing, and you couple that with they came in arguably in worse shape last season because it was much more of a we need a lot of help to get in at the very last minute, and they got in, and then Matthew Barzal had missed what, a month, and first game back was the first game of the playoffs with essentially a brand new line mate. And they gave up four of the most whack-ass goals in NHL history in the same series, two of which were overtime winners.
Yeah.
Right. So other than if you take that out of the equation, that series was a coin flip, and Carolina was the same level, maybe even more of a favorite in that series. So I think there's some things in recent memory that the Islanders can point to and say, we've emotionally gone through the ringer and we've come out the other side, and we know this team extremely well, and we know what works and what doesn't, and the things that work are also have been working for us for the last 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't think it's a coin flip series, and I think if they kick things off on Saturday and Carolina scores three goals in the first 11 minutes of the game, it would suck, but it would not be terribly surprising. And everyone, you know, whether it's my colleagues who do the previews or the national audience or anybody would be like, oh yeah, I told you so. That guy was in Carolina's gonna flip. But if it doesn't happen and it's a tense series, to my mind, like that's more what I'm feeling it's going to be, that it's going to be nip and tuck, and whoever's, you know, better in net, whatever the Islanders are, you know, if they're still scoring goals, you know, if they have five high danger chances and they score four goals in a game, like they've been doing a lot in the last few weeks, I'm going to be like, yeah, okay, you, Mike, your theory is right that this is a team that, you know, forgot itself for a little while and remembered itself, and also has some things specific to facing Carolina that they can feel good about.
No, that's what I was saying to Mike before. Like, if they go to the game seven, like, that's going to be a coin flip. Like you said, basically, I mean, they could pull that out.
Anything beyond five or six games, maybe even five, where it's, you know, back and forth, or the Islanders are staying in it, or they're ahead in the series. Like, I think people get so enamored of the Hurricanes in general with the way that they play, and then kind of forget about them because the coverage of the team is so minimal, kind of in a similar to the Islanders, but even more so, that it's just assumed that they are a wagon at all times. And really what you're looking at now is if they go out in the first or second round this year, then you're talking about like, do we have to trade one of our core guys?
Yeah.
Because this will be four or five years in a row. I mean, it was a fluke that they got to the conference final in 2019 because they really weren't ready for it. And that sweep was the most non-sweep, you know, maybe until they got swept by Florida, it was, you know, kind of Brendan Moore's funny quote about that wasn't a sweep. Like, well, 2019 second round wasn't a sweep either.
Yeah.
but this will be, you know, 5-6 years. Then you're getting to the stage where, I don't think they're going to change coaches or anything. He does obviously a very good job, but maybe you're starting to think our core is not the core that's going to get us to the point we should be at with the team that operates the way this team operates. So I think if they start to get frustrated by the Islanders, by Varlamov, by whatever the Islanders do to frustrate teams, you know, get out attempted 98-37 and win 3-1. Then I think Carolina's going to be feeling it a lot more than the Islanders would.
Right. Well, that's a good point. I mean, I didn't even think about that. We talked before about like the fact that this team does, you know, they as good as they are and as good as their regular seasons are, they have not made the Stanley Cup Finals since they won it back in 2006, which is almost like a lifetime ago. And obviously they made a couple of conference finals here and there, but most of the time they kind of peter out in the second round. And so, yeah, I guess like we could see that. I mean, how they haven't, it's still the same three goalies. I don't know, but maybe I shouldn't say anything because, you know, then one of those guys is going to take off and win the Conn Smythe Trophy or something. But another thing we were talking about, too, is kind of on the flip side of that, which is like this is most definitely going to be the last ride for a number of Islanders, a couple of guys who are UFAs on the older side. Like you said, do you get the sense from being in the locker room and talking to them that they recognize that this could be their last ride? And I mean, I'm speaking specifically of Clutterbuck and Martin and, you know, maybe some other guys who think they might be on the trade block or something like that. Like, do you get the sense that these guys feel that pressure, and maybe not pressure to, you know, necessarily win the Stanley Cup, but like pressure to be like, we got to keep this thing going because this is it for us. And then the team is going to be different next year.
A little. I mean, I think when you get into the playoffs and you win a bunch of games in a short space of time, I don't think anybody's really looking too far ahead. And that's kind of part of being a professional athlete. What separates them from us is that we're always thinking about a million different things that paralyzes us. And that's, they're able to not do that.
Yeah.
You know, I think Matt Martin probably recognizes, but Matt Martin will become the mayor of Manhasset after this. So his legacy on Long Island will only grow if he stops playing hockey. So, but I think, you know, guys like Clutterbuck, and he played all 82 games. I think he recognizes that if he wants to continue playing, he had to do a little bit more than he'd done in years past. And I think Anders Lee is a guy who, he's no dope. That guy is a very sharp person. He's, you know, part of being captain is knowing everything that's going on and maybe even a little bit beyond everything, at least in the locker room, and certainly knowing about yourself. I think he probably understood that if he couldn't, you know, function at even 75% of what he's been able to produce the last few years, that he was in danger and could still be of being bought out. Certainly the situation with Josh Bailey last offseason, these are all guys that are still very close with Josh. He still lives on the island. He's still around, you know, coaching his sons at Northwell Ice Center. So it can change quick. And just because Lou Lamoriello values loyalty maybe above everything else, I think he understands that the changes that you can make after an unsuccessful season, you have to make. And this team doesn't have a lot of leeway, even with a cap going up. I think there's some understanding of it. I think the contract situation for a lot of guys kind of changes things, but it's such a cliche, but and everybody says it, but it is a very close-knit room. I think with a team that plays in the shadow of another more popular team that's younger and now having more success, it brings you closer together if you're kind of a team that's out of the limelight and has been a team that's been together a lot. And I think one of the things that Wa has been able to do with a fresh set of eyes is doing things like putting Casey Cizikas with Barzal and Horvath. Not something that any, you know, and it's not a knock against Lane Lambert. It's just who would have thought to do it?
Yeah.
Except a guy who's not watched the Islanders much over the last decade or so.
Yeah.
You know, it's stuff like that, I think, makes it feel a little fresher. It takes away the stale atmosphere a bit and kind of reminds you like, oh yeah, there are things even within the same group that might be feeling a little tired that you can do to revive some things. And putting Clutterbuck alongside Kyle MacLean, like Cal Clutterbuck can come back if he wants. That's generally my sense is if he wants to play another year, there's not only a spot for him on the roster and in the salary cap, he can play. Like he's had a pretty good season for him. So I'm curious to see, even if they lose in, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 games in the first round, how the way the back half of the season has gone under Watt will affect what Lou Lamoriello decides to do.
One thing I'm going to need you to ask Wah before.
Oh no.
You know, maybe we can save this for the off season is I would love to know how many Islanders Patrick Wah could name that don't play for him right now. that weren't a dynasty team on the dynasty team that weren't Mike Bossy really. Like, cause yeah. I feel like you talk about fresh set of eyes. Like did Patrick Wah, had he ever watched Casey Cizikas play a game of hockey? Did he? If you said Casey Cizikas to Patrick Wah walking by you in Quebec City or wherever the Ramparts play, like, would he even know what you just said? Like, come on, it's one of the most bizarre things in this bizarre season is just being like, oh, Patrick Wah is the guy who just tapped Casey Cizikas on the shoulder and told him to go out and play with Bo Horvat and Matt Barzal, and I wonder if Cizikas, when he watches Kyle MacLean play with Clutterbuck and Martin's, like almost like watching your two friends go to like one school and you go to a different high school and be like, damn, like they're still playing together and I'm over here, you know, playing with Matt Barzal. Like this is tough, but I wonder too, like one of the other things I think is getting overlooked in the series, and I brought this up with Dan and I wonder if you picked up on it, is like the marginal improvements that the Islanders have made through someone like MacLean and or through just Pierre Engvall playing a little bit better and Lee, like you said, Lee playing a little bit better. I feel like that stuff isn't really showing up in previews. And I get that that's, you know, asking a lot of people who don't watch the Islanders every night to realize like, oh, wow, you know, like that this they look like a different team than they did on March 15th. And that's because Pierre Engvall is, you know, he's imposing himself more. And because Kyle MacLean has found like a really good role with this team. And because Mike Riley has been good, Romano's still been good. And you know, even like Robert Bortuzzo has been effective in what he's had to do. I think Pelech and Pulock have been a little bit better as well. Like, I do wonder if you've noticed like this team has taken like a bunch of maybe like 10 or 12, small steps forward, and if it's 10 people doing that, like it actually makes a difference where as if it was just like one or two of them doing it.
Yeah, and I think that fresher perspective, you know, if you're a new coach and you get hired in June, let's say May or June, and you got the whole summer, you see what the roster is going to be and you can strategize and say we're going to start with this and we've got data and we've got video and we've studied and we've studied and we've studied, you're probably sticking with that stuff a little bit more. I think the thing that's now a benefit that looked like a detriment when Wah came in is he was experimenting all the way through, and it's weird to do in a season that's not, you know, they weren't down where the Sharks were, so you could just, yeah, we'll do, you know, we'll try whoever. Yeah, you want Cizikas with it on the top line? Yeah, let's give it a go. The hell with it. This is, you're trying to do it to win games and see what works and change some, you know, throw open some windows that were closed for a long time. So I think that has benefited them greatly. And also, yeah, that, you know, around the margins, they are a lot sturdier, I guess. I mean, I you wouldn't say Mike Riley and Robert Bortuzzo without looking at, you know, Clearsight or Evolving Hockey. I don't need to see that to say, I bet their metrics are terrible, because it's still two guys, one of which was picked up on waivers and one of which was basically not playing on a team that he was on for a decade. And these are guys that are being asked to play not insignificant minutes, especially like some hard defensive minutes. And that's not, you know, Robert Bortuzzo doesn't get around the ice that great, and Mike Riley gets around the ice great, but doesn't really like to do a whole lot in the defensive zone all too much. So, but I think having that third pair versus having Samuel Bolduc completely devoid of confidence or seemingly skills in the playoffs last year by necessity was just, you know, it's night and day. And, you know, the Carolina can make your best defenseman look stupid because they're going to try to outwork you and get to pucks and retrieve and circle around and make you stay in your own zone for a minute and a half. And they can do that against almost anybody. But I am interested to see if having a little bit more depth and another year of Romanov, who to my mind has been exceptionally good the last month or so, even playing with Sebastian Aho, who is mostly a liability, and Pellick and Pulock back together. And frankly, you know, we don't really know what Noah Dobson's status is. We'll see, you know, if he practices before they head to Carolina, you'd hope he could be able to play, but he was playing so tired to me for the last 6 weeks. He was, you know, you're talking about all these guys that have raised their games a little bit. He was the only one that I thought his game sunk because you have to show some effects from playing 32 minutes a night for an indefinite period when Pellick and Pulock were out. So I think this stretch, if he's healthy enough, might actually help him be more effective, because he just, you know, he looked, him and Sorokin, to my mind, were the two guys that really looked the most beaten down as the season wore on, because they were just doing too much and seeing too much in the first 3 or 4 months. So, they are deeper. I mean, Carolina's better too. Jake Gensel clearly makes them better. Their back end with Orlov is really good, you know. But, you know, I feel like if the Islanders are disciplined in their own end, you know, the shots are going to come. They're going to try to beat you to the rebounds and pucks in the corner and all that stuff. And if the panicky, fragile Islanders return, team that can't exit the zone or, you know, makes soft flip passes that don't go past the hash marks, it's going to be a problem for them. And I'm sure that we're going to see some of that, because Carolina can do that too. But in general, I feel like, you know, 2020 and 2021, and even the first round in 2019, you know, are they that much? Is this team that much worse than those teams? It's exactly the same to me. The difference was those teams had incredible confidence, communicated them by a coach who was one of the greatest, you know, kind of mental strength coaches in NHL history, a guy who could give confidence to anybody if you talk to them for 2 minutes. He's just just a fantastic human being. And I think Patrick Roy, because like you were saying, there's a lot of guys saying like, holy shit, Patrick Roy just told me to go out on the ice, or he's showing me video. Like I used to watch this guy's highlights when I was a kid. And now you get beyond that and you've got a guy who actually like thinks pretty intensely about strategy and has a way of communicating. You wouldn't say that Barry Trotz and Patrick Roy were similar in any way, but it seems to be somewhat having the same kind of effect, which is the guys are the best versions of themselves, and it's not, you know, it'll never be appealing to the outside world, but it works. And if it starts working in this series, then I give them a good chance.
That's all really interesting. In fact, you're 100% right that we will see the old Islanders at some point, I'm sure, at points in this series. And I'm going to go ahead and assume that it's going to be in the second period of most of the games, because that's when they always seem to show up like clockwork. This has been great. As always, your appearances here are always great. And I definitely urge everybody to read your article that came out, was I guess today or yesterday, called The Tao of Patrick Roy. And it's great. You know, if you go to The Athletic, don't read the Dom stuff, read art stuff, you know, over there. I just go right to /team/Islanders, and I can just avoid everybody else. And you can read here. And this is just great. And I got to thank you, because you get into the sort of X's and O's stuff here, and you finally explained what he was talking about when he said dice and second quick, because he keeps saying this stuff. And I'm always like, did I miss a class or something? Like, did I, I don't know. Was there a memo or something handed out that I didn't get? I was sick that day.
Every time you would mention those, I just like to imagine Andrew Gross just like nodding right. his head along, being like, I don't know what he said, but this is great stuff.
I feel like my wife, when we're watching a Marvel movie and I'm like, oh, it's this guy. And she's like, oh yeah. And I go off on a whole thing about some comic books from the '70s or whatever. But, it's great. And you know, the guys talk about, oh shit, it's Patrick Waugh, and like how he's just a funny guy sometimes when he says stuff. And Clutterbuck talks about the sort of language barrier a little bit, you know, and how he understands French a little bit. Was there something in writing this article that surprised you in kind of learning about Waugh yourself, or like what his relationship is to the players that came across and you had to kind of put it in the article?
You know, to me, the thing that I found out early on, just calling, you know, when you see a new person come in, you say like, do I know anybody that played for this guy or knows this guy? And I'm looking at the old Avs roster. It's like, oh, P.A. Parenteau, one of my old favorites, a guy who I love talking to. So I happened to be in Los Angeles covering the Rangers at the time that they made the change. And I listened to Waugh's conference call, and you know, he's always got something very interesting to say, and the way that he says it is interesting. No matter whether he's talking to us, clearly when he's talking to the players. So I talked to PA for a little bit and I said, is this, you know, like, is he just like a, I'm Patrick Waugh and you're not, like, you better listen to me kind of guy. And he said, absolutely not. Like, he has a lot of incredibly good ideas about hockey. Like, and this was even 10, 12 years ago when coaching strategy wasn't even as detailed with data and film as it is now. Said he's an X's and O's guy, and I was blown away because I think we think about it, and it's been reinforced with, you know, Wayne Gretzky was a very mediocre coach and the greatest player of all time. You think about some of the great players. Denny Savard was not a great coach. Even middling to good NHL players who have become coaches in the last 30 years or so, I mean, you think back, like I put it in the article, you go back to like Sid Abel and Hap Day, like right. way back when there were 12 NHL players and they all became coaches because there just weren't any people in the league. But like now when you have this wide variety and you also have guys like Barry Trotz and Peter Laviolette who barely got out of amateur hockey and became coaches at 23. And that's why they're all, you know, everybody aside from Al Arbor and Scotty Bowman, who's in the top 15, is still coaching in terms of coaching wins and games. Paul Maurice, yada yada. So it's hard, I think, for a player to, you know, especially a good one, to break in. And so you just assume that there are guys who are going to be like, just do what I did. Why can't you do this? And I think that's kind of the general knock on especially a Hall of Famer becoming a coach. But he doesn't seem to be that way. And I just was kind of waiting for the opportunity to see what was going to happen, but hear him talk. And, you know, that day when he was talking about Dice and playing a different system, I happened to be there that day and it was fascinating. It's, you know, you don't hear coaches talk strategy like that with the media almost ever. And I think he's very, his confidence, maybe it used to be arrogance, but his confidence seems to be, I don't care if you know what I'm doing. We're going to do it better than you. And
he's the best.
That's why he's not really following the Lou playbook of keeping things as secret as humanly possible. He's happy to tell people what his goalie rotation is going to be. I imagine that's going to change now that we're in the playoffs.
Sure.
he's fairly candid about injuries, also going to change. But I think he's generally just I'm going to do my job. And guess what? I'm going to do it better than you. And my guys are going to be better than yours. And we're going to win. And it messes with the minds of Islander fans for sure, because they've never had a personality like this. Barry was confident, but in a very different way.
Right.
And I think even people who go way, way back, you know, Al Arbor was a great player, played in plenty of Stanley Cup finals, but he kind of fell into coaching quickly and really wasn't he wasn't Al Arbor when he came to the island. He became Al Arbor here. But and even Barry Trotz, coming off a Stanley Cup, great coach, you know, guy who'd coached built the team in Nashville, but he wasn't a known commodity. Like everybody who's an Islander fan of a certain vintage, you know, even these guys who weren't alive when he was winning Stanley Cups know who he is. So it's totally uncharted territory. And to think that Lou has only been here 6 years and he's hired two guys that are, one is a Hall of Fame coach for sure with the Stanley Cup. And the other is already in the Hall of Fame and would love to win a Stanley Cup as a coach after winning three as a player. Like, that's some shit that Islander fans have never seen. And you can debate his roster construction. You can debate, is he losing his fastball? Is it this? Is it that? Does he run the team the right way? Should he continue on? But he is doing stuff that I'm sure is incredibly surprising, not just to Islander fans or fans of hockey in general, where they're just like, they don't think about the Islanders even. The team is just not on anybody's radar, but national pundits, media, TV networks, you have to know what's going on with the Islanders now. Patrick Waugh is the coach. Lou Lamoriello is the GM. These are guys that are pillars of the game of the last 40 years. And even if you can just take that and tell everyone else, F you, they work for us. There's something satisfying about that, I would imagine.
Yeah. I think so. That's well put. I like it. I like it a lot. You know, yeah, I wish, you know, maybe a series win will make people think, you know, about the Islanders a little bit more. But like Mike said, you know, this is now old habit now. These guys are a playoff team. Like the one season that they didn't make the playoffs was the Murphy's Law season where everything fell apart, you know, right from the get-go. And they had a million game road trip to start the season and COVID 18 times and so on and so forth. So it was a little crazy, but yeah, hopefully they can turn some heads. This would be great.
They missed quite a season here on the island, but when they weren't paying attention, a season that culminated with Wade Dubowitz on an oil rig, maybe, wishing everybody good luck.
We've got
no idea where he was.
Done some investigating.
I was in the locker room in Newark, and Kimber Auerbach, the Islanders head of PR, showed me on his phone, and I said, who is that? And he had Doobie. That's how he has him in his phone. And I said, I was just like, I'm trying to do interviews and think about what I'm writing, and I'm just like, I was too much stuff going on for me to say, like, what is he doing and why is he wearing a reflector? Is he going out?
Yeah.
Is he directing traffic on an aircraft carrier now after done doing this video? Like I didn't, the context was so,
yeah,
just blew my mind. And I never was able to kind of return and be like, where is he and what is he doing? So that's my next question.
Yeah. When he drops the puck for game three,
right,
either him, yeah, or that, the guy who was running the gambling ring out of his cobbler store in Merrick. But yeah, so we get the Wade Dubowitz thing, and then of course the last moment of the season was Ruslan Iskhov wishing Jeff Carter bon voyage.
That's great.
That was really funny.
Unbelievable.
The new generation and the old generation, yes, meeting.
Yeah.
What a way to cap off just the, when I think about the first game of the season, which was just a typical Islanders win over the Sabres. And you show me that, and you're like, here's the first image of the season, 3-2 win over the Sabres, very matter of fact, business like win. And then you show me the last image of the season, and it's Ruslan Isakov shaking Jeff Carter's head at the middle of UPS Arena in a meaningless game for the Penguins. It'd be like, you got to fill me in on the rest of this because is that Patrick? Do I see Patrick Waugh wearing a suit?
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, think about what a thrill it was for Jeff Carter to shake hands, yes, with Ruslan Iskhov,
yeah,
the next great final, superstar.
His final NHL game, too.
Exactly. Let's not get crazy now. Yeah. You never know. But yeah, no, it has been a wild ride. And yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Dobson and Sorokin aren't the only guys who are tired, because it's been a long, long ride. And yeah, to get Wade Dubowitz from either an oil rig or, you know, working on a resurfacing road somewhere, or as I thought, maybe working on a remake of The Abyss somewhere. I don't know. We'll have to find out more about the Wade Dubowitz thing. But Art, we can't thank you enough. It's been a long day. We're going to actually keep you for a little while longer for a special episode of Country Club Atmosphere exclusively over at the Patreon. So we can't thank you enough. Is there anything that we can look forward to? Everybody knows where to find you, so I can't ask that. But Is there anything we could look forward to? Any more features coming up that you have planned for these next couple weeks while the Islanders are still alive?
Just, you know, every season back in the day when I was covering the Islanders, I would solicit my friends around the league. I'd get one team executive, an assistant general manager, one coach, and one player to anonymously break down the Islanders series. So we'll have that for game one. And did a little bit of work on a Mike Riley feature, talked to his close friend growing up, Nick Leddy, who had nothing but glowing things to say about the guy that took over number two from him. And he was certainly proud that it was a guy that he grew up with in Minnesota that is wearing his number and playing a sort of a poor man's version of Nick Leddy's game from his time with the Islanders. So yeah, a couple of those, and we'll see what else comes up. If it's a long run, you gotta save your big guns for as we, the further we go along. So we'll see who else crops up at some point.
Two things real quick. Make sure that Mike Riley knows that Two Guys with a Podcast manifested his coming to the Islanders like 3 years ago when he was still playing for the Bruins, because we made that happen. And two, I don't know if anybody read the story about Marshall Warren, who was the Islanders, this kid who just signed with the Islanders, who's from Long Island. He had been drafted by Minnesota. He played in Michigan, played at, I think, BC, and now signed an entry-level deal with the Islanders. And I was reading a story about him on the Islanders website, and it said that his favorite player growing up was Nick Leddy. And I immediately felt 1,000 years old because I was like, Jesus Christ.
So does Nick Leddy.
Oh, my favorite player growing up was Nick Leddy. Growing up? What are you talking? I feel like Nick Leddy was, sometimes I feel like he's still here. Like, anyway, that was pretty wild. But Art, thank you so much again. We really appreciate it. Follow us on Twitter at Isles Anxiety Pod. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible.com. I just found out we're on Audible.com, iHeartRadio, YouTube, and YouTube Music, and anywhere you get your podcasts. Our theme song is Morning Haze by Family Dinner. Listen to more of their music at Bandcamp and on Spotify. Of course, read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion all through the playoffs and all through the offseason. Islanders Anxiety Podcasts are part of the Fans First Sports Network. Shop VintageIceHockey.com. Try wines from the Pinot Project. Mike, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at The Big Lebowski. Read and listen to his work at Action Network. Any final thoughts on the clinching that was this week, the playoff series ahead, or I don't know, anything else that we've covered in this very comprehensive episode?
No, I just, you know, for the first time maybe ever, I feel like I'm actually looking forward to a game one rather than dreading like the anxiety I feel, because like I keep saying, it's going to feel so much easier than watching this team play the Montreal Canadiens in a must-win game, or the Chicago Blackhawks, or Jet Greaves, or anybody like
God.
You know, like this is going to be a piece of cake. So whether they win or lose, I'm really excited for them to get this going.
We don't have to worry about some random Russian guy coming to play for the Flyers in the game and stealing it. He literally got off the plane from Magnitogorsk. Yeah, that's all true. So, well, there you go. Well, we'll be back probably on Sunday after game one, and then we'll figure out what's going on for the rest of the week. And like I said, we're going to have our mailbag episode next week at the Patreon. So sign up, patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety, and we'll talk to you again very shortly. All right. Thanks again. Take care. Bye-bye.